On Wednesday, December 6th, the President of the United States formally recognized Jerusalem as the capital city of Israel, breaking with more than 60 years of official U.S. policy. Why did this happen? What does it mean, and what might happen next? To respond to the urgency of this moment, Unsettled is trying something new, a miniseries. We're bringing you short episodes featuring experts and activists, each with a different perspective on the new status of Jerusalem. In this segment, I spoke to Shira Robinson, Associate Professor of History and International Affairs at the George Washington University, where a few years ago, I took her survey class on the history of the modern Middle East. I got her on the phone just a few minutes after the president's speech.
Why is this such a big deal for people who care about Israel? Well, it's one of the few ways in which the United States has, until now, since 1948, fallen in line with the international consensus about the inability or the lack of rights that Israel has to declare, for Israel to declare Jerusalem as its unified capital. It's true that in 1995, Congress passed with overwhelmingly bipartisan support a law that proclaimed Jerusalem as Israel's capital and directed the president to move the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. The president at the time, Bill Clinton, very conveniently signed a waiver that after that had to be renewed every 6 months that allowed the president, whoever was the sitting president, to delay that relocation. And the reason that relocation until now has been delayed again and again is because it moving the capital from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem would be a clear repudiation of all kinds of international understandings. First of all, that Jerusalem either must be under some kind of international administration as per the 1947 partition plan, or administered according to some other arrangement that is endorsed by the United Nations. And this became incredibly important, not only after 1948, when Israel conquered Jerusalem, West Jerusalem, but also when Jordan annexed East Jerusalem in 1950. But it came up again, especially in 1967 after the June War, because within weeks of conquering the West Bank, which includes East Jerusalem from Jordan, Israel declared the unification of the city and annexed the city, but expanding the boundaries about 28-fold, so as to include huge portions of the outskirts of East Jerusalem proper to be a part of this supposedly unified capital. And the reason that the international community continued its refusal to recognize Israeli sovereignty over any part of Jerusalem, west or east, is that it knew that, first of all, in a formal sense, it violated the United Nations Partition Plan resolution, which called for the separate international administration of Jerusalem, but also because it would inflame the sentiments of the entire Muslim and much of the Arab world, because Jerusalem is houses the third holiest site in Islam, the Al-Aqsa Mosque, and also because in terms of Palestinian political aspirations, East Jerusalem since 1967 has been seen as and really was the administrative, intellectual, cultural, academic, even medical capital of the West Bank, and it was seen as the only legitimate site for a political capital of a future Palestinian state.
So what's new about this decision?
Well, what's not new is that the United States is not suddenly reversing decades of effective opposition to Israeli settlement policies within the West Bank or East Jerusalem. The Israeli government has acted with virtual impunity for decades, and particularly since the Oslo peace process or so-called Oslo peace process began in 1993 in terms of continuing to appropriate or expropriate Palestinian lands in East Jerusalem and Palestinian property for the purposes of exclusive Jewish settlement and use. And the U.S. since 1993 and since 1967 has effectively made a stink and a formal and public stink and fuss about this activity, this settlement activity, but it has done nothing effectively to actually stop it. And so in that sense, there's nothing new under the sun here at all. What is new is that Trump is kind of putting people on notice that he people, meaning the international community, diplomats, and especially Israeli Jews and Palestinians, that he's happy to flout international convention, and he is no longer concerned with continuing the charade of U.S. support for some kind of political negotiation to end the Arab-Israeli conflict. What this move does is it signals really the end of the pretense of an ongoing political negotiation. And it basically says we don't, despite what Trump may have said a few minutes ago in his speech, it really sends a signal that Palestinian self-determination or the struggle for Palestinian self-determination and political aspirations mean nothing to the United States, and what matters is Israeli domination.
So I'm wondering, is this a symbolic move? Or
I would say this is largely a symbolic move. Palestinian East Jerusalem has been under a stranglehold since 1967, and it's become particularly suffocating since the Oslo Accords. I lived in the Christian quarter of the Old City of Jerusalem while I was doing my dissertation research, so I saw the brutality of the occupation, as well as the very unequal services, municipal services accorded to East Jerusalem as opposed to West Jerusalem. Trash wasn't picked up regularly. General services were not as good. Schools were not as good, and on and on and on. Every time I left the Old City to go to the archives, there were Palestinian young men being lined up against the wall by the police, and you couldn't interfere because if you did, you couldn't ask what was going on, or you would threaten your own arrest, things like this. So it's the U.S. decision to kind of recognize Israel's separate and unequal domination over East Jerusalem as opposed to West Jerusalem, where people are afforded basic due process rights, this announcement is largely symbolic. It's earth-shattering in its symbolism and its official reversal of decades of U.S. policy and U.S. conformity with the international consensus. But effectively, the U.S. has been supporting Israel's exclusive domination over Palestinian lands since 1967.
I'm wondering, as a result of this move, how much farther away are we from getting both sides to negotiate with each other? You know, what does this do for trust?
I mean, there is no trust. There was no trust yesterday, and there was no trust the day before that, or a year or two or three or 10 before that. So the peace process has effectively been dead for over a decade. It's effectively been dead since 2000, when the Second Intifada broke out and Israel responded so vehemently. It was arguably a dead letter on arrival because the terms of the Oslo Accords did not signal any future for an actual sovereign Palestinian state and security for Palestinians. So in the Declaration of Principles, Israel promised to recognize the PLO as the representative of the Palestinian people, and the Palestinian national movement in the form of the PLO promised to recognize Israel and to preserve its security within its borders. So it was a completely unequal set of promises made in the exchange. And so we shouldn't be surprised that settlements continued unabated, that, and in fact increased, that Israel's grip on the natural resources of the West Bank increased dramatically, that Israel built a whole new series of bypass roads and checkpoints within the West Bank. None of these things should be surprising. So what this does in terms of trust, that's not really the right question, I would say. I saw something on Facebook this morning by Yusuf Munayyer, who is the, I don't know what his formal title is, the director or the chairperson or whatever. He is the head of what was formerly called the U.S. Campaign to End the Israeli Occupation, or the U.S. Campaign to End the Occupation, and what is now called the U.S. Campaign for Palestinian Rights. And his quote was, or what his post said, something to the effect of, the Trump decision to move the embassy is the greatest gift he could have ever given to the BDS movement.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reason behind this post, Yusuf Munayyer anyway, and I would tend to agree with him, thinks this is going to further alienate American citizens and potentially even American Jews who have concerns about the occupation from not only from the Trump administration, but also from Israel. Because, of course, Benjamin Netanyahu and the Israeli government is
deeply and fully on board with this decision, and they've been pushing it for years. Bibi was directly behind the U.S. legislation in 1995 to move the embassy.
All right. Well, is there anything else you think, especially us in the Jewish community, and those of us who feel connected to Jerusalem, is there anything else you think we should know and we should be thinking about?
I think American Jews who are connected to Jerusalem, who feel a connection to Jerusalem, should visit East Jerusalem, visit mm-hmm. the neighborhoods surrounded by the wall, visit the villages that are cut off from other villages in the West Bank, visit the universities and schools that have the wall cutting through them or that have been affected by the brutality of Israeli rule in Jerusalem or by the inability of East Jerusalemites to maintain their status. People in Palestinians in East Jerusalem have been losing over time their rights to remain in the city through all kinds of bureaucratic manipulations that have aimed to lessen or reduce the number of Palestinian Arabs living in the city. So it's the claim that Jerusalem is overwhelmingly a Jewish majority city. So I think that American Jews who are confused by this announcement and who care about Jerusalem, and people who, if they also feel a sense of commitment to basic social justice rooted in universal human rights, they should actually study more about East Jerusalem and learn about how U.S. foreign policy has enabled the colonization of East Jerusalem and the marginalization of its Arab residents from the life of the city.
Unsettled is produced by Emily Bell, Asaf Calderon, Yoshi Fields, Max Friedman, and me. This episode was edited by Max Friedman. Original music by Nat Rosenzweig. Get more information and listen to previous episodes at our website, unsettledpod.com. And be sure to stay tuned for the next episode of our Jerusalem mini-series. In the meantime, don't forget to follow Unsettled on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And most importantly, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts to make sure you never miss an episode of Unsettled.